Come explore our world of coffee. Deluna Coffee was founded in 2014 by Ed and Courtney Lemix alongside their son, Brett. The Lemixes are Pensacola natives with a passion for coffee, so what better than their Beachin' blend, which is just that, Beachin'. It's their classic combination of Colombian and Brazilian beans. It creates a superior French roasted coffee taste, lower in caffeine, so it'll keep you easy breezy. Ed and Brett are both FSU alums and are extending a special offer to our listeners. Use the promo code WordChant15 for a 15% discount. Visit delunacoffee.com and check out their Facebook and Instagram.
From Tally to Cali,
it's time to wake up.
Wake up, wake up, wake up. WarChant.com is your ultimate seminal sports source.
And this is Wake Up WarChant, fueled by Deluna Coffee.
Coffee's for closers only.
Now here's WarChant.com's Azan Hajivandi
and Corey Clark.
This is for Deshaun, East Lawn, La Mama and her friends.
Wake up! What is up? It is Wake Up War Chant. It is fueled by Deluna Coffee, DelunaCoffee.com. Come explore our world of coffee. Promo code WARCHANT15 will save you 15%. Maybe Paradise, maybe Hurricane, maybe Graffiti, 1559, Five Flags, Midnight Shift, whatever you want. Even if they have some decaf, too, if you're one of those people. Corey Clark's here, everybody, as well. He works for WarChant.com, the ultimate seminal sports source. Thumbs up on the YouTube, 5-star rating review on your iTunes, Apple devices. First off, Corey, before I bring in, shout-out to the big homie Grant. I guess he works at the local Target here in Tallahassee. He brought me my curbside order. Wasn't trying to go inside and deal with all the youths have returned. The youths have returned en masse to Tallahassee. What a cool town this is when all the students aren't here. Sorry, guys. Love you, but still, leave often, please. How are you, Corey?
I'm good, buddy. I'm good. I like students. I'm glad they fill our city for what, 6 months, 7 months out of the year.
Hmm. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I'm sorry. I mean, I get it. It's really your town. I mean, I know I'm living in it, like I own a house, but it's for you folks. This is your town. It's for the formative years, 18 to 22. Come here, have fun, live, grow, prosper. But yeah, he said he's a big fan of the program, Corey. So.
All right.
Yeah. That's why I should have probably, instead of just shouting out some guy, giving me my stuff at Target, I should have prefaced it with the fact that he likes this podcast that we do. Three big topics to talk about today, Corey. We'll begin, I guess, maybe with the lead story. 8 p.m. on Tuesday evening, Tatum Bethune, Miami native, UCF linebacker, done a lot of good things for UCF. He might be the highest graded player that Florida State has has pulled in the portal, even above Jermaine Johnson. Most recently here, he recorded 108 tackles for UCF this past season. He is a linebacker, 6'1", 225. Apparently, this was a bit of a heads-up battle between the hometown Canes and Florida State, and the good guys came out on top. So, again, offense is a focus, but defense needs to be addressed as well. This is one position that we kind of haven't been talking about a lot lately, Corey, but they went ahead and got it done. And I can't really find anything wrong with this one.
Yeah, I don't know how you could. The guy, I think he had four games with double digit tackles. He had one game, I think, with 14.
He had five.
Wow. Yeah. He had two picks. He had eight tackles seven or eight tackles in the bowl game win against Florida.
Seven. Correct.
You talk about positions of need going into the season, and obviously we know that where they are, and they're everywhere. It's not like there's one position where you're like, oh, yeah, Florida State's set. But I would say the two weaker positions on the team were wide receiver and linebacker. And you feel like they've addressed wide receiver really well. We'll see how it pans out, but they've certainly got some guys in here with potential, more potential than they've had at that position recently. And then you've got you got a guy that, I don't know, was there a guy with more tackles that was in the portal? You know, he was like 21st or 22nd nationally in tackles per game.
Better than Tyler Grubbs, I bet.
Yeah, right. Other than him and Ty, I don't think Tyler Grubbs in the portal. Man, Tyler Grubbs just loves Ruston. He's never leaving that place. He's locked and loaded down there. But yeah, so, you know, he's about, when you talk about a proven commodity at that position, I mean, he's about as – I don't know that you could hit – you couldn't hit a ball further than that. I don't know who else will be out there. Maybe somebody from Georgia or Alabama will hit the portal after that game's over. But as far as proven commodities, I don't know that there's many better ones out there at a huge position of need. So again, you know, like we have to do for the rest of our lives, you start grading recruiting classes on what happens on signing day and then the subsequent days. And again, this feels like another signing day. And now you've got, what, 7 transfers? And I'd say you're averaging 3.5 stars probably with those guys. And this guy, I don't know what he was coming out of high school.
Three star,
but I mean, he certainly seems to have played even above
producing.
That. Yeah. So that's really encouraging. You know, they like Deloach, they like Gaynor, and now you throw him into the mix. So I feel like you feel at least okay about the position, right? We'll see how his skill set translates to Adam Fuller's defense. But I mean, he appears to be a run stopper. He's a big dude. Maybe he's a better Steven Dix. No offense, Steven, but similar sized. But maybe just a little more instinctual, maybe just a better football player. Maybe a lot more instinctual and a better football player. And you get him for a year, maybe two. I think he's still just a junior. And so we'll see how it goes. But, yeah, man, I think that's a really nice commitment they picked up.
Yeah, junior, true freshman year was 19. So he's played all 3 seasons. This was his highest graded year of them all. As a true freshman, he played in 142 snaps, graded out at 70. Last year, with 504 snaps, graded out at a 57, which is not good, but bounced back in a good way this past season. 641 reps, snaps, 75 was his grade. And to your point, Corey, 24th in the nation in total tackles for an individual. So I'm not gonna poo-poo on this. There's nothing to poo-poo on. I wonder again, like if. Defensive end, obviously, this doesn't – just because they do this doesn't mean they're, like, sleeping behind the wheel on defensive end. I just wonder, again, my not well-developed defensive brain, just, you know, the way things are in this day and age of having to defend offenses, especially in this conference with quarterbacks that are really well. Just feel like you need, like – I don't know when do we really see linebackers kind of, oh, man, if we had a better linebacker, we would have done better in this situation kind of a thing. Because if they're going to play 4-2-5, mainly, he's not being bring in for depth purposes. I wonder who's kind of like odd man out. But again, you're getting better. So no matter what, no matter who he comes in, if he takes reps away from Kalen or takes away reps away from Amari, I would imagine that it's going to be for the better for Florida State. So
I would assume, and this is just an assumption, they'll have a battle and there'll be a competition. But DJ Lundy played a ton of snaps.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like this might be a better version right now of DJ Lundy. Okay. And DJ Lundy had an okay season. He showed some promise. He's a young kid. You hope that you're upgrading here, that this guy's better than DJ Lundy and they'll compete for the job. But now you have Deloach in this kid to go along with Gaynor coming in and out, depending on the situation. I just feel like you've upgraded there.
No, you're right. You're right for sure. Yeah. I mean, maybe Kalen and Amari are more interchangeable, but yeah, he would probably fill in the shoes of DJ in certain sets and schemes. So for sure, that's definitely.
He's probably not going to win the Butkus. But you've upgraded that position just like you've upgraded the wide receiver position. You are a better roster. You are better on the offensive line. You're better at wide receiver, probably much better at wide receiver, and you might be much better at linebacker now. You're certainly better than you were 3 weeks ago. The roster is forming into a competent roster with real Division I football players. And that helped. Proven too, man. Like, I know those kids out from the wide receivers from out west that are coming, maybe not the most proven guys, but they played on the stage. They played in games. Their schools were not happy to lose them.
Pittman, at least the guy from Oregon.
Yeah,
sure.
But even Wilson, I mean, he played 18 games, whatever he had. I mean, he 18 catches in 12 games, blocked his rear off on the outside. I mean, showed an ability, he at least got on the field, right? Like, these weren't guys that left because of playing time, I don't think. They left for maybe, you know, better passing offenses or more opportunities, whatever the case may be, or just clashing with the coaches, whoever knows with the transfer. But I just think in all these positions, the one wild card is the kid from Illinois, right? We don't know what he's going to be as a wide receiver other than really fast. But I
feel better about him than I do Johnny Wilson, to be honest with you.
I just think Johnny Wilson, man, he's 6'7" and can block. So even if he doesn't become a 60 catch guy, you know, he's a guy on those wide receiver bubble screens or the runs that get out wide. He can contribute in a way that not many guys on this roster right now can, blocking wise. So that in itself, you know, his scholarship pays for itself just with that. But either way, the point being, this is what we said had to happen. This is what we expected to happen. And I don't know, other than the kid from Louisville, that we'll see. I mean, he just hadn't accomplished much at Louisville, the defensive back.
Greedy Vance.
Greedy and a deuce. I like what we're doing here, gang, in the portal.
And
Greedy
Wilson.
And deuce. Yeah. Johnny Wilson's a great name, too, absolutely. You feel like you've upgraded. Your roster's just gotten better, but you're absolutely right. I think right now, so I don't know how many more linebackers you'd even want to take. To your point, they don't play a ton anyway. They're mainly in a 4-2-5, so it's not got you got to overload your roster with five more linebackers. But I think they're done at wide receiver unless something like the Oklahoma kid that put his name in the portal on
Mario
Tuesday.
Mario Williams, come home. Come back to Florida. He's a Florida guy.
He's Plant City, baby.
Yeah, man, come home.
But Florida State's got some kids from Plant City, right? James Wilder, was he from Plant City?
No, he's from Plant High. Plant City's that's Polk County, though, I think. That's either periphery of Hillsborough or it's actually maybe in Polk. Odell's got to know somebody in the family, I would imagine.
Yeah. So if you get him, you can tell the Illinois kid, hey, you want to play quarterback? Whatever you got to do. but if he wants to come along, sure, you're not going to say no to him. But I think they probably feel pretty good about what they've added at wide receiver. Maybe they take an exceptional guy out there. O-line, they got two guys, maybe one more, maybe a quarterback. You're not going to say no to great talent, but absolutely, from now until spring practice, from now until whenever the portal closes up for the summer, goes on winter break, goes on summer break, whenever that is, defensive line is the priority.
Yeah.
Defensive line is the priority, particularly outside, but any good defensive lineman will do.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
All right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Also on Tuesday in the morning, we spoke to Alex Atkins, offensive coordinator and offensive line coach. Corey wrote five sort of big takeaways from the press conference on Tuesday. Later this morning, we'll speak to Tony Tokars, the quarterback coach. What did you find most interesting about the comments from Coach Atkins? I liked him kind of talking about, he was asked, I think, by Andrew Adelson, just being, you know, a minority candidate, being an African-American man, being able to handle or actually get the title of offensive coordinator, something that doesn't happen all that often, and whether he kind of looks at himself as, you know, maybe being a sort of a good example to other folks trying to strive to be where he's at. And he kind of, you know, shrugged it off a little bit. But I like the fact that he kind of pointed out that, man, it's always like the quarterback's coach, right? Like the quarterback's coach is a guy that gets elevated to becoming OC and into calling the plays. And this was something they kind of talked about when he took this job 2 years ago was, you know, if this is something that he would be able to transition to and if that's sort of the vision that Mike Norvell had for him. So it was kind of cool to hear him talk about the fact that, you know, this is, you know, didn't catch him by surprise. This was kind of part of the plan. And I don't know if it worked out as quickly as they thought it would, but here we are.
Yeah, that I thought that was interesting. He really pivoted quickly from being an African-American offensive coordinator to being an offensive line coach slash offensive coordinator, because I haven't done the numbers, I haven't crunched the numbers, but it's got to be as rare. I think I texted it to you and Ira, or maybe I even wrote it. I can't remember. There's only
he's
one of only four,
yeah,
three or four in the Power Five, maybe five in the Power Five that are offensive line coaches / offensive coordinators. Because yeah, head coaches want their QB coaches to be the OCs almost always. So it's a rarity. So he talked a lot more, I thought, about that, like offensive line coaches getting a chance. Like, I was misreading the transcription, but it seemed like he felt a sense of pride about that kind of pioneering that he's doing. Like, that there aren't many O-line coaches that get to be OCs, and as he pointed out, you know, there aren't hardly any O-line coaches that go straight to being head coaches. Sam Pittman at Arkansas, he might be the only one. As far as I can remember, it's usually you got to be an OC first and then get to be a head coach. It's clear that Alex Atkins wants to be a head coach. I assume most guys on every college football staff in the country want to be head coaches. He does. And I think that path, he thought that path included being an OC. So I just thought that was, you know, I'd written about it. I'd publicly questioned it, like, man, this doesn't happen a lot. Offensive line coaches, how's this going to work? But he talked about it too, because he knows it's rare. He's in the business. He knows better than I how rare it is. And he did say, you know, number one, he did say he'd be on the field, which we assumed. And he did say that Norvell will be calling the plays, which again, we assumed that. But what I thought was interesting was how he talked about, you know, so I think he was asked about Jordan Travis.
Yes.
Because what's interesting about this now as we move forward in this relationship between us and him is we're not going to just be asking him about Darius Washington or how's Maurice Smith looking or what do you think about these young guys. We also ask him about wide receivers and quarterbacks because it's all under his purview now. He's the OC, and he kept bringing that up. Like, you know, he likes dabbling in all the other positions, and you know, he talked about how, you know, Norvell always comes to coaches for advice or suggestions, so he's been a part of the game plans even when he wasn't the OC. But also he was asked about Jordan Travis, which when I read that, because I didn't watch the press conference, but I read the transcript. I'm like, why is somebody asking him about Jordan Travis?
It was
Ira. Yeah, wait. He's the OC. Of course he should be asked about Jordan Travis. So I got to get my mind right about that, because usually the O-line coach is strictly O-line coaching. But he talked about how he'd stand next to Jordan Travis a lot during practice and that they have a nice relationship. And they actually learn from each other because, you know, Travis, you know, Jordan before every snap has to check at the line, has to make, you know, blocking changes, blocking audibles, has to call out the, you know, all that stuff that a quarterback does, especially in Florida State's offense. So they work in concert together. So he seemed really impressed, obviously, with Jordan Travis. But, yeah, it makes sense that an O-line coach would have a lot to do with game planning in a particular week, right?
Right.
Like, you go into Clemson and you're like, look, Kenny, we can't block these guys for 5 seconds. So let's get rid of all the long-developing pass plays and let's try to find some quick hitters or whatever. You know, I think there's a lot of dialogue between O-line coaches, or there should be on good offenses, between OCs and O-line coaches. So I think Atkins has been given plenty of suggestions over the last 2 years. Now it's just his show, and he seemed really excited about it. It was very complimentary of Norvell for giving him the shot.
Yeah, I wonder what changes. I mean, I should have hopped on. I mean, I was on the call. I was having some tech issues, but actually it was kind of a little bit earlier than I was anticipating, and I was, you know, just like, I'm not going to hop on the call and actually ask a question, but I just wonder what does change here, because something does need to change. The offense has not been producing nearly as prolific as we had hoped, or I'm sure anybody on that team was hoping, and definitely needs to obviously get better. Maybe Norvell taking control of things, calling the plays. Maybe that's going to be hopefully the difference here. But I just wonder, yeah, when you're – that's another thing too. It's, you know, I guess he probably doesn't care. He was saying there's some offensive line coaches that just want to be offensive line coach. Like, they don't want to get involved in any of the other sort of delegation and, you know, responsibilities and stuff. But, like, again, it just goes back to the one what I was wondering about, things like Walt Bellis. Like, man, if you're coordinating, if you're not calling the plays, and is it really your offense? Like, what are you really coordinating? So I do wonder what's good. The cool thing is we'll be able to see it, though, right, Corey? We'll be at practice. We'll be able to kind of tell if they're practicing things differently, if there's a different kind of rhythm or, you know, sequence of what they're doing. It just – I don't – I wouldn't think it would change though, because it's the Mike Norvell offense,
yeah,
you know, quote unquote. So,
yeah, I don't foresee a ton of changes other than you hope it just gets a lot better. You know, like a touchdown, 10 points a game better, would be very nice. Would be a nice boost to the whole program if it could start scoring 33, 35 points a game. But yeah, it's Norvell's offense, right? Like, I don't think Dillingham was rogue. He wasn't just doing whatever he wanted and calling crazy plays where Norvell's like, what are you doing?
Right.
I think they worked hand in hand together. And I would think the same thing during the week. I do wonder how the – I just wonder, not so much the play calling, man. You only got so many plays. Now, taking a shot on first down, running it on second down all the time. There are other things that you can maybe self-scout or know what you're good at, know what you're not good at. Hopefully the receiving helps. But the getting better receiver. But I wonder how it's going to work on, like we talked about, Sunday to Friday. Like, how much is Atkins going to be concentrating on the offensive line and making sure they're working as one unit and being good and getting better? Because that's priority number one, really, for any offense. But he's the offensive line coach. That's got to be good. It's got to get better. But then also, on top of that, what's he doing with the how much is he breaking down film with Norvell? It's a lot. That's why there aren't many guys that do it. It's a lot to be an O-line coach and breaking down the film of just your unit and then also having to break down what the defense is doing, the defense you're about to go up against. So it'll be interesting, but I'm more intrigued by that the Friday to Sunday, or Sunday to Friday, sorry, than I am the what happens on Saturday. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Who comes up with the game plan? How much is it? Because, man, I'm not diminishing what a quarterback coach does, but you got a little bit more free time there than you do as an O-line coach when you're coaching 14 or 16 kids. 16, I don't know how many offensive linemen they're going to have on this team. Probably 16, right? 15 or 16, somewhere in that neighborhood. He's going to have three quarterbacks. So, obviously, there's more time to devote to game planning and scripting as a quarterback's coach than there is as an offensive line coach. So how will those jobs be broken up? Will Norvell have more of a hand in the game planning too and not just the play calling? I would assume. But I also don't think this is a promotion in name only. I do think that Atkins is going to be much more involved in the game planning.
Yeah. I mean, because otherwise you're coaching a man down if you're just really giving him the title. I do like sort of the move, though, to kind of take control of your own destiny here if you're Mike Norvell. And like, all right, man, I'm going to do what I do. I'm going to start calling plays again because, I mean, why not? I mean, at this point, you know, if it is your offense, you know, why not have the dude who's made it up be the one that calls it and knows the tempo? And, you know, we'll be curious to see how much he marries it into what Jordan's able to do, and maybe if Jordan can meet him halfway and become more of a polished passer, which we kind of did see flashes of as the year kind of progressed. So cool things to keep an eye on as we get closer to spring football. And to Corey's research, Atkins, the fifth Power 5 offensive line offensive coordinator. Arizona, yeah. UCLA, Texas, Michigan are the others. He mentioned Jeff Grimes, who that's a Baylor O-line coach. I don't know if he's the OC for Baylor. I should know who the Baylor offensive coordinator is. I think actually
well,
it is Jeff Grimes.
I was going to say, but again, not many or any. I don't know that any are
calling
plays.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, he's our offensive coordinator and tight ends coach. So there you go. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, that's a little bit different. But, hey, if you're coaching tight ends at Florida State, you still are, you know,
Two handfuls there too.
Yeah. He was calling plays at BYU, I think, when they had Zach Wilson. So that was the hire that Dave Aranda
did.
All right. So that was high flying octane stuff. Offense. Golly, who's Leonard's offensive coordinator? Did they do that in college? I know a lot of these NBA teams. I feel like the Warriors are the first team I heard doing it a few years ago, where like Steve Kerr had like a offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, assistant coach, where kind of one focuses on the other. Florida State shoots 24% from the floor.
Yeah.
15 of 62 in Tuesday's 76-54 loss in Winston-Salem to Wake Forest. Golly, 4 of 25 from behind the arc.
Yeah,
20 of 25, though, from the line. There you go.
Yeah, knocked him down from the line.
I didn't watch a minute of the game. I'm sorry. I'm not going to. What? Was it even televised? I think it said ESPN Plus on my my app. We have ACC Network now here in Tallahassee. I put it on. I'm like, spoken to my Comcast remote control. I'm like, ACC Network. I was like, bloop, bloop, bloop. It wasn't the Florida State game. So carry me, Corey. Per
it was on, I think it was on, it's not Fox Sports anymore, Bally Sports?
See, I was looking at that on my TV guide. Maybe I should have just gone and put the channel on. But if it's not on the TV guide, I'm like, it's not on.
I was watching it up here in Atlanta, the area. So, yeah, it was on here. I had to take Brady somewhere for the first half. So, I didn't miss anything there, but I watched a good portion of the second half. And, yeah, man, it was ugly. I don't know. Look, if Anthony Polite's going to keep shooting under 30% from three, they're not going to win anything of significance. I don't want to put it on one kid because it's certainly not just Anthony Polite's fault, but he has not been good at all. I know he dealt with an injury in the preseason, but he's a net negative player right now, and he's a fifth-year senior that was pretty darn good last year. I think he scored like in their win over Colorado in the tournament, he scored like 20-something points. Like, this guy's been there and done that. Like, he's had good games, plenty of them, big moments. So he's just got to get, you know, they're not going to win a lot of games where he's, you know, 1 for 8 from the field. And Caleb Mills missed his first 10 shots, finished 2 of 13 maybe. So your two guys that you're counting on really to lead you in the scoring in the perimeter were a combined 3 of 21. And – you know, I watched the game, and it, you know, they wasn't real active, wasn't a lot of penetration, but also they just missed a lot of shots, man. That happens. It was ugly. Sometimes, they just scored 83 in their last game on the road. And then this one, they went 10 minutes and scored 7 points in the first half. Just
a
17-0 all around.
Run. Wake had a 17-0 run, yeah, in the first half.
Yeah, just all around ugliness, man. Clearly, this team is going to have to find something soon if it wants to make the NCAA tournament. I know we're supposed to give them the benefit of the doubt, and we did in December, even with a couple of, you know, blowout losses to Florida and Purdue. You gave them the benefit of the doubt because Leonard's been doing it for half a decade now of producing really high-quality teams. But, you know, going on the road and getting blown out by Wake is a whole different matter. Losing at home to Syracuse where you blow a double-digit lead and just look awful in the second half is a whole different matter. So, I don't know. You know, they don't get really good point guard play. My man, Jalen Worley, was a minus 25 in 19 minutes, which is almost impossible to do. I think the kid has a future. I'm not giving up on him 12 games into his college career. But, you know, we all know what Raekwon Evans is or isn't. And you would hope that you'd get better point guard play, and it's just not happening. And you don't have anybody at the rim that can protect. You don't rebound well. There's a lot of things that look bad in that game. You know, Caleb Mills is shooting 40% for the season. Matthew Cleveland, I think Matthew Cleveland is probably the most talented player on the team. But, you know, he's not shooting great either. So, I don't know, man. I don't know what the answers are. I don't know. Does he shrink the bench? He played Malik Osborne 32 minutes. He doesn't like doing that. He played Caleb Mills 30. Does he shrink it and just play like Matthew Cleveland, Mills, Osborne? Fletcher only played 12. What I don't know. I think he's still searching for answers, clearly. And he hasn't found them yet, but it's a team without a lot of experience and not with a lot of experience playing with each other. And it's showing. And they are not very good right now. They are an average ACC team right now. But, man, we've seen it before. They might find something. But it's got to start with the guards, man. Mills and Polite just have to be better. Certainly than they were Tuesday night, because that was gross. They're good shooters, too, Aslan. I've watched them. Somebody tweeted at me because they're like, we were told this was going to be Ham's best shooting team ever. And it's crazy because they are good shooters. Like, Wyatt Wilkes has proven he's a good shooter when he's open. Anthony Polite has proven he's one of the better shooters in America when he's open. Mills has proven he's a great scorer. Fletcher can shoot. Osborne, we know, can shoot. He's the only one that's shooting well right now from three. But they're shooting 33% from three as a team. And in the one game against Syracuse, their other ACC loss, they were 4 of 30 from three. And in this one, they were 4 of, 25?
Yeah.
So in their two ACC losses, they're 8 of 55 from three. I can promise you, me and Brady could chuck up 55 threes.
Shooter.
And maybe bank in 7 or 8 of them. Yeah. I mean, that's impossibly bad. So that will, I just, the law of averages, they're going to have some games where they go 15 of 30 from three. Those will come because this team can shoot. I promise. Everybody on the floor can shoot. They really, at every position, John Butler can shoot. It's just, you know, they're young and they haven't played a lot together, and they're searching for an identity that they haven't found. They don't necessarily have great point guard play, and they have nobody to protect at the rim. And other than that, they're killing it, though. They got, you know, I still think there's a lot of talent there, man. There's a lot of teams that would love to have a Cameron Fletcher and a Matthew Cleveland and a Caleb Mills. It's just they haven't played enough together to really be fluid right now.
Florida State knocked down two free throws to go up 11-8 with about 15 minutes left, and then they went scoreless for 7 minutes and 54 seconds of game time.
That's impossible.
Yeah,
it's all, they forced 22 turnovers. Florida State did, and Florida State only had 10, but they both had about the same number of points off turnovers, like 15 each or 15 to 12 or something. When Florida State's forcing 22 turnovers, they should be scoring 30 points off those turnovers. They just couldn't get out in transition. They weren't making good decisions in transition, and they just weren't knocking down easy open shots, which you have to figure they will. It can't go on forever. You have to figure they will.
What point do we hit, Corey, where they're going to have to win the tournament to get into the dance?
Oh, well, that's coming soon. I mean, if they don't turn it around and win soon, because the problem with the ACC this year is there's not enough marquee names in it this year. There aren't good enough teams where you can count on winning three or four. Like Duke, you could beat Duke. That would be a great resume builder, but they don't have any other ones. So, I think you're getting to that point where, we're still really early. We still got, 17 conference games left. But you better have a winning record in conference. And one or two of those wins needs to be over a tournament team to have any chance of getting in. Right now, you just start stacking wins. Like, I think they play Louisville on Saturday.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, correct.
At home?
Yep.
First home game in, I don't know, 3 weeks. So that's a huge win. You got to hold serve at home, and Louisville would be a nice win. If they don't beat Louisville, then yeah, man, it happens. These seasons happen.
Yeah.
We thought that they were immune to it. And maybe they are. We're only 12 games in, but we are 12 games in. That's a whole football season. So we're 12 games in. I think there's enough to judge to say this team has some serious issues. And if they don't get corrected, and if their good players and good guards don't start shooting at a much higher clip, then they have no real shot at a postseason. But again, I can also admit that it's January 5th, so it's too early to hit the panic button.
And they've got too many talented players to think that they're going to run cold for two whole months. You know, I mean, I think it's a shrinking of the bench. It's figuring out like 7 or 8 guys that you can count on. Because I don't know if they even know. It still feels like there's a lot of tinkering and experimenting, and let's see if this guy works well with this guy. And I mean, they got to just at some point be like, all right, we're going to roll these guys.
Well, it sure seemed like in the second half, they made a little bit of a run after they got down. I think they got down 23, 25, something like that. They made a run and cut it to 16, which is crazy to say against Wake Forest. They cut it to 16 and they got a steal that would have made it 14, but of course Polite missed a 2-footer that would have cut it to 14. But it seemed like he had kind of settled on, like it was Cleveland, Mills, Polite, Evans, and Fletcher and Osborne. Like that seemed like the six. Wilkes played 12 minutes, but most of them were in the first half. Worley didn't play a ton in the second half. So maybe that's what it is. I don't know. But it's, you know, it's just not something we're used to. Yeah. Since we've been doing this show, you and I haven't had a basketball season like this. But it, again, it's also early, and teams can turn it around. They had, you know, there was a team that won the ACC tournament way back when started off worse than this. Now they were much more senior laden. They had a lot more veteran leadership than this team currently does. But you know, you never know. You can't give up on a team in January. But that was just a really ugly showing on Tuesday night.
Well, you know, Raekwon Evans, Anthony Polite, Malik Osborne, these aren't young guys either. You know, they're going to have to find a way to, you know, as Marvin Lewis said, this is your team. Find a way to fix it. Reach down inside and be a bleeping pro. So, I know you guys aren't pros, but, you know, you guys can help spearhead it all. So, they'll be back in action, as Corey said, Saturday at home against Louisville.
Saturday night, I think. Isn't that a night game?
Probably. I'm sure it's 9 o'clock at night or something, too.
8 p.m., I think. It's a primetime Saturday night game. So if you're in Tallahassee and you don't have COVID, go out there and watch the Seminoles play.
All these random people I'm friends with on, like, Snapchat that I've, you know, befriended through other social media means, they're all just, like, posting, like, photos of their temperature or them drinking NyQuil. That's,
Really?
We're under siege right now in Tallahassee.
We are, man. We are. It's everywhere. But yeah, luckily I haven't gotten a fever. And I can still taste. Just, you know, runny nose, little head congestion. But the worst day was the first day, and I'm knocking on wood, but hopefully I'm through the rough part. It just feels like a runny nose, like a normal cold. But if you do have it, or if you're gonna get it, I wish you the best.
Well said. All right, 10 a.m. Wednesday, Tony Tokars, quarterback's coach, speaking with the media on Zoom. I don't want to put too much pressure on our guy, Austin Cox. I think maybe even Ira hopped in there. They did a whole transcription, everybody. They transcribed the entire, however long interview was with Alex Atkins. Maybe we'll do something similar. But I do know we do the blow-by-blow live on our warchant.com tribal council. So be a subscriber and dial into that. We'll have posts and updates on Twitter. The replay will be up on YouTube. Story will also be on the website. So we'll have some football to carry us over here as we begin the chilly week of January that we have begun upon here. Corey, hey, man. Thanks for toughing another one out. Appreciate you.
Another COVID game for your ears truly. When are we doing we going to do one on for Friday? We're going to do a Friday show?
I guess. I don't know. I was going to say, like, do we do a Renegade Express every week? Should we do something like Renegade Express every other week? I mean, I know if we put a threat up there, people are going to ask questions. But I don't know. We'll talk about it off air. But yeah, we'll maybe try. I know.
I don't like talking to you off air. Have you and I ever had a phone conversation?
I don't think so. No, I don't like speaking on the phone though.
No, I don't either. Well, I mean, that sounds rude. Like we do this, just, we act like we like each other just for the radio. I guess we don't act that much like we like each other, but we do. But we text all the time. Yes. We don't talk. It's not the 1990s.
It's not.
We don't have to call each other on the. I have a buddy that won't ever return a text. He just calls me.
The worst.
And he says it's because he's driving. I'm like, whatever, man. Just text. Just text and occasionally look up. What's the matter with you?
He is Corey. I'm Aslan. Thanks so much for listening to Wake Up War Champ, fueled by DeLuna Coffee. Oh, hey, I lied. Let's listen to Michael Langston break down Tatum Bethune's commitment right after this. Not a big sunshine pumper, everybody. You guys pretty much know that by now. Hopefully, it's why a lot of you don't like me. You don't like the truth. Sorry. I'm cool with it, though. But hey, man, this latest addition from the portal, Michael, this is pretty good, man. This is pretty, pretty good. Tatum Bethune from UCF has committed to Florida State. Michael, just this is something we saw coming on the horizon, but just how big of a deal is this for Florida State and Mike Norvell?
Well, it's a big deal because you're battling a kid that's a hometown kid for Miami. Miami was the main competition here. Certainly, he grew up liking Miami. So you really had to sell him. Obviously, there's connections with Sabbath Joseph, defensive analyst at Florida State, and then also Randy Shannon. He's really close with both of them. I just literally got off the phone maybe 5 minutes ago with Tatum. I'm going to work on the story as soon as I get done with this. So it was big just to, you know, win a head-to-head battle because I think people view Mario Cristobal as like Freddy Krueger to your nightmares because he's a great recruiter. But I think it's a big deal, FSU getting it done. It continues to show that momentum that Mike Norvell's building. Certainly, it's a position of need. They need linebackers. They need faster linebackers that can really, you know, help this defense. Linebacker's been a problem as far as this team. So adding a guy that has multiple years, because he has 2 years left. Tatum just let me know that. So having a guy for multiple years is a big deal for this program to keep adding really good pieces. And, you know, they've done this throughout the process. They're addressing needs. We've seen how they address receiver, and now they've addressed the linebacker position with Tatum. So I think this is a big deal. It's a big move. It's a productive guy, leading tackler for UCF, certainly a big playmaker for them at the linebacker position. So I think he's going to add a lot to this defense.
Yeah, man, you mentioned over 100 tackles, and he missed the game this past season. And we're checking out PFF. I mean, these are legitimate numbers against pretty decent competition. You know, actually really good competition. Cincinnati, a playoff team. Boise State, always a strong group of five program. Right there, I mean, that's a 75 grade at the bottom of your screen. You can see right there, 75 overall defensively, 76 run defender, 76 tackling, 77 pass rush, 67 coverage, whatever. No one's perfect. But again, man, this might be the highest graded transfer Florida State has got. So yeah. This is somebody that's going to be definitely an instant impact guy.
Yeah, it is. And it's an impact at a guy position that you need. I mean, it's one thing getting guy, you want talented guys across the board. When you get them at a position of need, it's a major deal. And this is a kid that certainly can go in there early on, make an impact. He's going to be in there in the spring. He's enrolling tomorrow, according to what Tatum just told me. So he will be there in spring ball. He'll be around. You don't have to wait around for him to be there or see what impact he's going to make. I mean, I think he's going to be a significant impact guy. And it just really shows you their ability to understand. It's one thing knowing what your needs are. It's another thing in executing, getting guys that you actually have to have in this team. And I think FSU did a hell of a job of getting this kid. I mean, from the moment he hit the portal, FSU was on him. You can have relationships all you want, but the kid has to be sold on where you're going and what you're doing as a program. And I think that says a lot about Mike Norvell's recruiting, to be able to show these kids like, hey, we're going the right steps. I think obviously winning against Miami and showing that turnaround and where you're going, I think it's a big deal of getting a kid to the caliber of a guy like Tatum. And certainly they got some big fish still left in the transfer portal that they want to add. I mean, certainly want to address the defensive line and continue to do that. But I think this is a big step forward and certainly a major boost for FSU recruiting class in 2022.
There you go. You can see right there on the screen, 108 tackles, even though he missed one game this past season. As Michael said, he'll have more with Tatum Bethune, the latest commitment for Florida State here in 2022. What else is on the horizon there, Michael? Lots of guys in the portal, and defensive lines also staying much in focus for the staff, I assume.
Yeah, I mean, they would like to get, you know, one or two defensive linemen, whether that's defensive end or / defensive tackle or whatever way you want to do. I think they would like to get that. Jared Versus certainly at the top of the list out of Albany. So it's to make a decision, I would say, you know, in the next few days. I think that's kind of what I'm hearing. And then obviously you want to add a running back because they lost Jayshon Corbin. So I think they want to do that and then maybe address their quarterback situation if they want to bring another guy in. That's kind of, we'll see on that. And then, maybe another offensive tackle. So I think there's still activity. This thing's going to go on until, you know, probably the summer, until, you know, they address every need they want to. As far as what led to this one, I think, you know, when I talked to Tatum, it was, you know, just like I trust these guys. And I think a guy that played a big part in this is Kier Thomas. He played at Central as well. He's really tight with Kier Thomas. Obviously, Kier having a lot of success certainly didn't hurt their chances. But I think the main thing in him seeing how Kier was taken care of at Florida State and where this thing's going, I think ultimately led to him going to Florida State. For people wondering if I hadn't mentioned at the outset, he is already in Tallahassee. So he is here, drove all day to get to FSU. So certainly keep adding players like this to change where your program's going. I think it's a big deal. You still want to get high school kids. There's still some high school kids that they would like to add into this class. But I think getting Tatum is a major win for FSU both in recruiting this year and the rest of these transfers, but also in the future for 2023 to show people, hey, where this is going. You know, we can beat Miami for recruits. So we can beat Auburn for recruits. I think that's kind of their mindset of showing kids that, you know, they're changing things and they're changing things for the better. And I think this is a big step forward for them.
Do we know, before we go, Tampa product, Mario Williams from Oklahoma, wide receiver. Is that a guy that might be in play, Michael? Or do we need to go? I mean, do we need to get in the car, do spring tour, early winter tour, go see if he needs a ride anywhere?
I mean, it's a possibility. He kind of hinted he would like to play with Caleb, you know, here mentioned USC.
Both.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm sure FSU fans would love that. But, yeah, I think Mario is one that it could be a possible play. I'm sure they'll certainly look into it and, you know, certainly gauge his interest and go from there. But it's been a wild, you know, 48 hours as far as the portal. And I think it's only going to get wilder for FSU and a lot of teams. But definitely Mario could be a guy, you know, to watch. But we'll just see.
Come explore our world of coffee. DeLuna Coffee features over 24 different blends. DeLuna's unique roasts can be delivered ground finely for drip coffee makers, coarse for the craft crowd, untouched as a whole bean, or even in convenient K-cups. Founded in 2014 by the Lemix family, Ed and Brett are FSU alums and boosters who are extending a special offer to all listeners. Use the promo code WARCHANT15 for a 15% discount. Visit DeLunaCoffee.com and check out their Facebook and Instagram.